Good morning. I got married in 2009. Such a smart thing to do. One of the best moves I've ever made, I think. A lot of you who know me and know my wife would agree. Kid got lucky. Right after our honeymoon, I came back home and had to have a major heart operation, a major surgery, and that was pretty scary, pretty tough, but that's fine. We got through it. We moved together back down to Virginia, where I was working as a youth pastor at a church. And just for context, the pastor's wife, she was an oncologist. She was a doctor for folks who have cancer. And I got to the church and started working and serving as their youth leader. And I'm kind of still recovering from the surgery. You know, that's a tough time, you know, when you're still trying to get physically back into shape. And I lost a lot of weight. Now, you got to understand, I went into high school weighing about 85 pounds. And I think I got into the 90s somewhere around my junior year. And I broke 100 by my senior year. I was pretty proud of that, right? I was about 125 by the time I graduated. I really bulked up a lot my senior year. So I've never been a very stocky person. I've always been kind of a little pipsqueak with tiny little bones and legs and arms and just... Anyways, after the surgery, I got back down to like 100 pounds. Almost less than that, right? It was just really, really scrawny, frail, scarecrow frame. And the pastor's wife, Dr. Mandy, she looked at me and she was like, "You are unhealthy. You are dangerously scrawny and skinny and puny, and we need to do something about that." And she goes, "I'm going to prescribe you a steroid." Music to the weak man's ears. I was like, steroids, Arnold Schwarzenegger, yeah. Like, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to be massive. And so I started taking this steroid, and it didn't make me like a massive bodybuilder like I had hoped. It just made me hungry, like crazy hungry. I would eat and eat and eat. I would eat like an entire large pizza by myself and follow it up with like 4 or 5 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I would drink an unbelievable amount of milk. I would eat and eat and eat. I went to Arby's and got their giant roast beef sandwich. You know, the really big one that's so big it has to come in a salad container? I ate that whole thing and then a big, large order of curly fries. And then I walked across the parking lot to the Taco Bell that was there and I ordered a party pack and ate 12 tacos. I was just eating and eating and eating. Unbelievable amount of food. And this is all over like a 2-week period, maybe 3-week period, right? That I was eating this unbelievable amount of food. And I gained a lot of weight in two places. In my face and my belly. So I had, from here up, I looked like the poster child for Little Debbie's. I had this big, just chubby face, just fat cheeks and chin, and just, you can picture me with a fatter face, right? That's what happened. And then from here down, I looked like a very slender lady who was 8 months pregnant. It was just like, boop, boop, there it is. And it was so weird, and my wife is looking at me, she's going, "Not only can we not afford to feed you, but this is not healthy. You look ridiculous. We've got to stop this." And I learned a valuable lesson right there, and that is you can't do it all at once. You can't cram everything into that short of a period of time. If you're going to gain weight healthily over time, you've got to stretch that out. You can't do it all in 2 weeks. So I got off the steroid, and like 2 weeks later, I flattened back out, and my face went back to normal. Luckily, my driver's license photo was right in that period, so I had to go several years with a fat face on my driver's license photo. Trying to cram, you know, like 6 months worth of work into a couple of weeks. And I learned a valuable lesson there, and that's a lesson I still keep learning. You ever learn a lesson and you're like, "Yeah, I learned that," and then God tries to teach you again? because you didn't quite get it, and then he has to teach you again because you didn't quite get that one either, and then he has to teach you again because you're pretty dense and it takes you a while to get it? Or is that just me? I have a propensity to want to rush and get a lot done. It's just in my nature to want to just hit the gas pedal and go, 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 go. And that's our lives. I mean, so many of us, not everybody, but so many of us live at a frantic pace, don't we? We're just nonstop, 24/7, go, go, go. We got to get to this thing, and then we got to get to that thing, and then we got to accomplish this, and we can't stop doing that. And all the phones ring, and we got to answer it, and then we got to do this, and we got to do that. You feel this mounting pressure and the intensity of the pace of our lives. It's like we're out of the right rhythm. In creation, go all the way back to Genesis. You get to Genesis chapter 2. I had all the slides on my computer, but for some reason it's not working, and that's okay. But in Genesis chapter 2, the very first couple of verses of Genesis, it said, "And after 6 days, the Lord had made the heavens and the earth." God created everything. It was a wonderful creation. God created the birds. God created the fish. God created the animals on the land. God created the trees and the plants of all kinds. God created the sky, the moon, the stars, the sun. God created all of it. And then on the seventh day, God says, "This is a special day. We're going to call this Sabbath, and we're going to rest." And God said, "I'm going to make this day holy." I used to read that and think, my, creating must be exhausting work. Creating must be very, very tiring. But I don't think our God gets tired, do you? I don't think our God exhausts himself. I don't think our God's ever gone, "Phew, need a break." I think it was more like a moment where God was like, "This is completed, and there's no more to do with it. It's how I want it to be. It's designed right. It's finished." In fact, that's what it says. He had finished his work, and so he rested. Another way to think about this rest, not rest like I need to relax, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, but rest. This very attractive lady right here in the front row, my wife, you notice her up on the stage playing the drum set? For those of you who are sitting over here, you just miss a very beautiful show. I sit right here so I can see her. If she were to get over on the drum set and just smash on the cymbals the whole time, a couple of things would happen. One, you would all probably get very irritated, right? You imagine you're trying to sing like, "Oh, the doxology. Praise God, from whom all blessing flow." Instead of that, you're hearing, you'd get irritated. What else would happen? Doug would probably look at Leah and say, "You know, you've had a good run, but you can't be on the worship team anymore. You're like, you're not pausing. You're not creating a rhythm with the breaks." In music, when you stop playing the notes, we call that a rest. And that's what makes it so beautiful. And that's what makes the music so pleasing to our ears. So meaningful. I think of one of my favorite songs with rests built into it. Dun-dun. Dun-dun. Even in my living room, I'm like, there's water behind the house. I just want to make sure there's no sharks sneaking up on me. Isn't that a great tune? It's the rests that make it so powerful. The rest period that just punctuates the beauty of it all. And God created us, and he's looking at our lives, and he's saying, "I'm going to establish this rhythm for all people. Work, 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 work. Rest. Work, 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 work. Rest." And it's a beautiful rhythm. It's how we're designed. So fast forward a little bit. God creates this day. He sets it apart. He makes it holy. By the way, holy, that's a great word, isn't it? I don't think we use that word enough. I think about that word all the time. To make something holy means to set it apart, to take it out of normal use, to pull it out of what's common and everyday and set it aside for something meaningful and something purposed and something valuable. When I met Leah, I didn't take too long. I asked her to marry me. I think 3 months into meeting her, I was like, please marry me. And she did. Anyways, I took her off the market. Nobody else can date her now. She's consecrated unto me. She's mine. That wasn't creepy. That was normal. We're okay. Stop using your wife as an example, kid. You're getting yourself in trouble. God takes this seventh day of his creation, and he says, I'm setting this one apart for something other than what the first six were for. I'm setting this one apart just for rest. It's an establishment right at the very beginning of creation. So fast forward the clock to God's chosen people are now in slavery. You know some of the biblical story. God's people, the Israelites, the Jewish people, end up enslaved by the Egyptian nation. If you're not really sure where we're at in the grand story, we're in the book of Exodus now. And the end of Genesis, beginning of Exodus, God calls a leader to take his people and call out freedom. And they are led out into the wilderness, away from Egypt. And the power of Egypt is broken. Now, Egypt is powerful. Egypt is the superpower of the time. Egypt has a massive army. Egypt has unbelievable wealth. Egypt has incredible religious system, gods for everything, and all kinds of god worship. Their society was saturated with religion, and so it's religious, and it's wealthy, and it's powerful with military might, and it's organized, and it's structured, and it's ruled, and it's governed, and it's got all of the precision of brilliant engineering that you could possibly imagine. We still have some of the stuff they built to this day. That's how many of you have stuff that you had when you were in your teens? Like, we just don't build stuff to last. They built stuff to last, right? I mean, it was amazing. And so God takes his people out of that, and when he does, I mean, he does the 10 plagues on Egypt. If you don't know the story, it's incredible. Those plagues line up with the Egyptian gods of the time. Oh, you have a god of sun? I'm going to blot out the sun for a little while. See how you like that. You have a god of the river? I'm going to ruin the river with blood. See how you like that. You have a god of livestock? I'm going to send plagues on your livestock. You get what God is doing. He's humiliating their whole religious system. And he's like, I'm God. And there are no other gods. Incredible. So he's going to pull his people unto himself. He's going to teach them, I'm the God. Because you've been in Egypt for a long time, and somehow Egypt starts to get into you. And so we gotta uproot that. And then as he's taking them out of Egypt, what happens? They pillage the wealth of Egypt. God does something in the heart of the Egyptians, and the Egyptians start giving them everything they've got. And the Israelites leave. Not empty-handed. They leave as slaves with backpacks full of gold and silver and all kinds of wealth. It's incredible. God's like, yeah, I'm God. The wealth of Egypt, I'm God. And then the army ends up deciding, well, we're going to get them back. We just lost our entire economy, the slave labor force. We can't let this just go down. So they pursue them into the wilderness, and they get up against the Red Sea, and God parts the sea. You know the story, right? God parts the sea, and God's people walk across on dry land, and the army chases after them. And in one moment, God crushes the army with the sea. He destroys their military might. But you know what I think was more tone setting and culture shaping than all of those big moments? It says the second month in the 14th day after they left Egypt, God sent manna for them to eat. Now, follow me here, because this is really important. Yeah, we can trust God with the big stuff, freeing us from Egypt and redeeming us. But now that we're out in the wilderness, we're hungry. How are we going to eat? How are we going to survive out here in the wilderness now that we're free, now that we don't have the slave drivers anymore, now that we don't have Egypt crushing us with their oppression? How are we going to eat? And God sends manna. It's like dew from the heavens that coats the ground with this stuff that they grind up and make bread out of. They call it manna. Manna just means, what is it? They're like, what do we got here? And God's like, eat it. Okay. And God tells them, you have to trust me in the wilderness. You're going to have to trust me. I don't want you storing this stuff overnight. I'm going to send it every day. Okay? I'm going to send it every day. And some people were like, yeah, we trust you. And they're like, I'm going to put an extra omer in my backpack. And of course it goes bad. And God's like, I told you not to do that. You got to trust me. And then God says, but here's the thing. 6 days, go out. And you harvest the manna from the desert floor. You harvest the manna 6 days. But on the sixth day, get a little extra and store it up. It won't rot overnight like it does on the other days. I want you to get a little extra because I don't want you to work at all on the seventh day. And that's exactly what happens. They store up enough manna to where they'd have food on the seventh day without having to work. And you got to think how novel this was. I mean, these people were treated like farm equipment, like building machinery. I mean, they just woke up and worked, and then they went to bed, and then they woke up and they worked, and they went to bed. And under the Egyptian rule, there weren't days off. There weren't times of rest. It was just work, 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 work. And if you want to stop, we will whip you until you die. It doesn't matter. I mean, they're just being driven by bondage. And God says, no, 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 no. You are no longer slaves. You're free. You're mine. Work is good. Work is meaningful. Work has dignity. But that's not what you were made for. You were made for me. And so God looks at him and says, don't work on the seventh day. Don't work on the Sabbath. Rest. Before God gives them the law, before he gives them the Ten Commandments, before he gives them the Levitical guidelines, before he gives them Deuteronomy, before he gives them his commands for how to live life, God says, take a day and rest. How meaningful is that? You see, then they move on towards Sinai, and God gives them the Ten Commandments. Are you familiar with this story? Moses goes up onto a mountain, and God gives him 10 commandments. And right in the middle of the 10, there's a really important one. Exodus chapter 20, verse something. You know what? I can still look at my computer, even if you can't see it. Come on. Ooh. Verse 9, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But on the seventh day, it's a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. God's like, okay, this isn't just about picking up manna anymore. I want to clarify this. He's going to etch it in stone. He's saying, look it. I don't want you working. I don't want your kids working. I don't want your employees working. I don't want your donkey working. I don't want anyone working. I don't want the foreigner living in your land working. Nobody works on the Sabbath. And this is such a beautiful rule because it's like God saying, I don't care if you're powerful or dirt poor. I don't care if you have a higher standing or wealth or if you have nothing and you have to live your life to the tune of somebody else's melody. It doesn't matter. You all get the day off because you're mine. It breaks down power structures. I mean, it's this beautiful moment. And he says, no work at all. And then in Exodus chapter 20, verse 10, he says, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that's in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Pay attention to this. In Exodus, when he's giving them the Ten Commandments, God goes back to the creation and says, I created the world in 6 days. And I made the seventh day holy. That's why you got to keep it holy. That's his reasoning. No work. Just rest. Just be my kids. Just be my people. Because I created the world in 6 days. I know how you're designed. I know how you're made. I created everything. And you need rest. How many of you have kids? You've worked with toddlers. Can you typically tell when a toddler needs rest? How can you tell? Oh, there's a million ways. They start crying more. They start taking stuff that's not theirs. They start pitching little fits. They get more and more defiant. They get more rude. I mean, they turn into little gremlins, and it's like, you need a nap. How many of you ladies are married, and you look at your husband, and you say, you need a nap? The human machine is designed to rest. I recently had an issue with my cell phone. I wasn't getting group texts for some reason. I would send out a message to 6-7 people, and I wouldn't get anything back. And I'm like, does nobody like me anymore? No, what do we do when the technology stops working? Turn it off. Turn it back on. All of a sudden, I had like 30 extra texts. I, whoa, where did all these come from? Even your phone needs a break every once in a while. The human machine is so much more in need of rest. And the natural rhythm, and we sleep at night, we work in the day, or maybe you have a different kind of job, but every day we need a certain amount of sleep, but every week we need a certain period of rest. And that's what God is saying. I designed you. I am creator. I know exactly how you function. I don't need to read the manual. I'm the inventor. In Deuteronomy chapter 5, see, Deuteronomy is called the second law. At the end of Moses' life, he already gave them the law. He gave them the Ten Commandments. He gave them the Levitical instruction. He gave them everything of how to live life. And then at the end of his life, he delivered a sermon that must have lasted like 6 hours. That'd be good. Pastor Tim next week. Pack a lunch. He delivers a sermon that's like 6 hours long, and it's basically the law again. He just kind of repeats everything he's taught them over the past 40 years. He's like, this is what you need. Let's just reiterate what I've said. And so he's going to reiterate the Sabbath command. And he says, don't do any work on the Sabbath. And don't let your kids do any work or the hired servants do any work. Don't let the foreigners do work. Don't even let your donkeys work. But this time he says, remember, you were slaves in Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to honor the Sabbath. You see, the first time he says, because God's creator, and he knows what you need. And now he's saying, because God is your redeemer, he's your rescuer, and you don't have to do the work anymore. This is going to get good. I want to make sure that I don't run out of time, because this is going to get good. So God's people go on this journey into life, trying to live out the law, and they build a kingdom, and the kingdoms rise and fall. We don't have time for all of the stories, but some of the prophets really attack the Israelite people and try to get them back on course, saying, listen, you guys are messing up the Sabbath. You're disobeying the Sabbath. The main charge was idolatry, but one of the charges you hear every single time before the nations are finally destroyed by God's hand is, listen, you are not honoring the Sabbaths. Isaiah says it. Jeremiah says it. I mean, all the major prophets are focused on this. Some of the minor prophets are focused on this. And so the people end up exiled. The people end up conquered by a nation as promised for disobeying God, for falling away from him, for getting so far from God. The people end up distanced from him. And when God brings him back, the people are like, we're not going to make the same mistakes that we made in the past. And so for several hundred years, they worked hard at honoring the Sabbath. Now we fast forward to the time of Jesus Christ. He enters the scene, and these people are walking on eggshells over the Sabbath rules. And they're trying so hard not to screw up the Sabbath. And they're like, man, we've got to not just be crazy good about keeping the Sabbath ourselves. We've got to police everybody else to make sure that they're keeping the Sabbath. And so Jesus starts his ministry. And he knows the law. Jesus knows what it's all about. He knows why God gave us the Sabbath. He's going, this is for rest. This is because you were designed to rest and recover. And you need this time to just recharge. This is because you need to spend that time with me in worship. This is because you're mine. And this is because you are a redeemed people. This is about being set free. The Sabbath is about freedom. And so Jesus is doing ministry. He's doing things like healing people on the Sabbath, setting them free from their infirmaries, setting them free from their diseases, setting them free from their broken bodies. There's one time they're in a synagogue. And Jesus brings up a guy who's got a shriveled up hand, and he looks at them, he looks at the people, and he goes, all right, you guys, you Pharisees, you Sabbath police, you tell me, is it lawful or not for me to heal this guy on the Sabbath? And they go quiet. And you can just kind of hear their muttering, don't you heal him, you better not heal him, don't you do it, don't you do it. And Jesus is like, be healed. And the guy's like, whoa, I'm healed. And they're like, oh, he did it. He totally did it. He did it. We got to kill him now. And Jesus is like, what are you thinking? Man was not made for the Sabbath. Sabbath was made for man. Jesus is looking at him and he says, you guys, Sabbath is a gift to help you recover and restore, and to give you a space in your week, every week, where you can just worship and honor God and delight in him. Sabbath is a time to remember that you are redeemed, that you are paid for, that you are not slaves. My God sets people free on the Sabbath, and I'm going to set people free on the Sabbath. That's what Sabbath is all about. Mark chapter 2, verse 28, he says, the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. This is a pretty weighty declaration. Because when Jesus says this, they're irate. When Jesus says this, these people are ready to murder him. What he's saying is, I am the Son of Man, which was a messianic title. Comes right out of the book of Daniel. Says he'll be seated high and in the thrones of heaven, right? I mean, it's this incredible picture of a God-man. And Jesus says, that's me, and I'm Lord of the Sabbath. In other words, he's claiming the ability to give law, to be over the law. You see what he's doing? As a person, to say, I'm over the law. I'm Lord of the Sabbath. I'm up here. Dangerous. Scandalous. He says something else that is so good, and I never really caught this. John chapter 5, verse 17. This is another moment where they're accusing him of violating Sabbath law. In his defense, Jesus said to them, my Father is always at work to this very day, and I, too, am working. Well, wait. Jesus was working on the Sabbath? But we thought that Sabbath was for resting and not working. What's going on here? You feel the tension in the passage? Are we saying that Jesus broke Sabbath? Well, no. No. As a human, Jesus never broke Sabbath. But Jesus was fully human and fully God. Jesus says, my Father is always working, I'm working. Sabbath is a gift for you. Sabbath is a gift for you. The Israelites didn't have to gather manna on the seventh day because they could trust that God would provide. God was working, so they didn't have to work. They could rest. The Israelites were freed from slavery. You see what's happening here? Let me get my thoughts straight, because this is so important. Y'all can take a nap later today. A good old Nazarene nap. Because our God never sleeps. You don't have to do the work because the work's been done. Do you know what Jesus said on the cross? It is finished. That's what God said at the end of creation. You see the parallel here? Okay, what Jesus is telling them is men can rest because I'm working. while he was on earth, it appeared to them that he was doing work, but he was doing the God work. He was saying, I am God. God doesn't need a Sabbath. Men need a Sabbath. God continues to work. In his defense, my Father is always at his work, so I work too. And what he's telling them is, I'm going to go to the cross, and I'm going to complete this, and the work will be done. And we will be set free. And so here we are now, fast forward a little bit further, okay? Here's the reality of our lives. We're busy. I read a book this week called The Tyranny of the Urgent by Charles Hummel. The Tyranny of the Urgent, that title captured me. And in that book, he says there's a constant tension between what's important and what's urgent. And life will just, if you don't make a plan, life will plan your life for you. If you sense that truth there, like if you don't chart a course is going to get charted for you. And Sabbath breaks that cycle. You see, we're at this point where our lives get chaotic. We get miserable. I do all the laundry at my house, 95% of it. And that's not because I'm a great husband. That's because my wife doesn't fold the towels correctly. Here's the thing. When you fold a towel, you take it the long way, and then you fold it in half, and then you fold that in half and that in half, but the crease has to go on the left side every time. Okay, and then when you set them in the, all the creases are the same and all the folds are the same. You can't expect a man to dry himself with towels that are all willy-nilly, right? And so I end up doing the laundry, and if I catch her trying to do the laundry, if she's folding the towels, I just, Leah, stop. You can't. You're a very smart lady. You have a million. All right, so anyways, I find myself doing laundry for six people. Oh, my goodness! Can you imagine having to do laundry and work a full-time job and feed a bunch of kids and go to all the sporting events and then all of the extracurricular activities beyond the sporting events, and you have to somehow be engaged in the civic community, and you somehow have to nurture your marriage and spend time with your wife, and you have to somehow make sure that you're spending one-on-one time with each of the kids, and you have to keep volunteering for the church, and you have to keep gas in your car somehow, and you have to keep maintaining your vehicle, and you got to mow your yard? Are you serious? Because you can't have dandelions. I'm out there picking dandelions one at a time, and you got to make sure that you get the mail every day so it doesn't pile up in the box. There's just one thing after another. And once a week, our Creator says, stop. Rest. Come worship together. Focus on the fact that you're redeemed. You're paid for. He's still on the throne. He's in charge of it all. You take a day off, he's not going to let the world go spinning out of control. Rest. You see, the question in the early church became, all right, the Jews have the Sabbath, and we're all Gentiles getting saved. We're outsiders to this whole new Christian thing. So do we have to have a Sabbath too? Do we have to obey the Sabbath law? And Paul wrote in Romans and then again in Colossians, he wrote, don't let anyone judge you on the days you hold special. Some of you, a Sabbath is important. Some of you, it's not. Some of you, this festival is important. That one's not. Some of you eat this and you don't eat that, and that's okay too. Just know that all of this, all of the festivals, all of the law, all of the regulations, it's a shadow pointing to Christ. It's all pointing back to Jesus Christ. And he's saying he's going to come, and when he comes, he's going to do the work. And when he does the work, he's going to set you free. And you're still designed to rest. You're still going to need that time, that space. I mean, the Creator doesn't change, and we didn't change. Our makeup didn't change. We're just saved now. And we can rest because we're no longer slaves to the tyranny of the urgent. We're no longer slaves to the need to work hard enough to be good enough. We're no longer slaves to the demands of every little thing. We get to stop once a week and say, I'm free. I'm a child of God. He's mine, and I'm his, and I can worship him. You see how beautiful this is? I'm going to close with this thought right here. Matthew chapter 11, verse 28. Jesus says, come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. He says, my yoke is easy and my burden's light. Come to me and you'll find rest for your soul. Jesus becomes our Sabbath rest. You get to take a day. You get to take a day every week, a full day, and say, okay, I get to go to church. I get to worship. I get to go home and take a nap. And nobody has claim over that time. I get to spend time with my kids. I get to invite the whole family in for dinner. I get to go fishing. I get to read my Bible. I get to pray. I get to make sure that this day remains holy, set apart for my relationship with Him. And in that relationship, in that meeting all day between you and Christ, you find rest for your soul. It's not about a rule or a regulation or a commandment anymore. It's about this amazing relationship of love that we have with Jesus Christ. I really struggled how to approach this morning. You can even sense it while I'm talking today. I'm struggling how to say this. Because what God is offering isn't another commandment. It's an invitation into a rhythm where it doesn't all come at once, but it's just a life built one step after another in beautiful relationship, in a harmony, a rhythm with proper rest. And so my hope for you as you leave today is that each and every one of you will make deep commitments as a family that you're going to remember the Sabbath, that you're going to honor a rest day every week going forward. You're already doing it. You're already here. You're already worshiping. But man, make this a day where you just turn off the cell phone and look around at your family and spend time with them. Make this a day where you don't do the hard work that drives you crazy. Make this a day where you say the dishes can wait till Monday. Make this a day of rest and recovery and delight in the Lord. He gave us Sabbath. Would you pray with me? Father, you are good. I love you. We all love you. It is amazing to think that we can just rest in you. It's amazing that just stopping is countercultural. May we be a people who live differently because we know you and because we love you. Father, I pray peace over our church family here. We love you so much, Jesus Christ. It's in your name. All God's people said, amen. God bless. We'll see you all next week.